Chapter 30. Her hand trembled, the ardor of his affection being so palpable that she seemed to flinch under it like a plant into burning a sun. Then he pressed her again to his side, and when as he had done running her forefinger round the leads to cut off the cream edge, he cleaned it in nature's way, for the unconstrained manners of Talbothay's dairy came convenient now. "I may as well say it now as later, dearest," he resumed gently. "Wish to ask you something of a very practical nature, which I have been thinking of ever since that day last week in the meads. I shall soon want to marry, and, being a farmer, you see I shall require for my wife a woman who knows all about the management of farms. Will you be that woman, Tessie?" He put it that way, that she might not think he had yielded to an impulse, of which his head would disapprove. She turned quite careworn. As he had bowed to the inevitable result of proximity, the necessity of loving him, but as he had not calculated upon this sudden corollary, which, indeed, Claire had put before her without quite meaning himself to do it so soon. With pain that was like the bitterness of disillusion, she murmured the words of her indispensable and sworn answer as an honorable woman. "Oh, Mr. Claire, I cannot be your wife, I cannot be." The sound of her own decision seemed to break Tess's very heart, and she bowed her face in her grief. "But, Tess," he said, amazed at her reply, and holding her still more greedily close. "Oh, you say no? Surely you love me?" "Oh yes, yes. And I would rather be yours than anybody's in the world," returned the sweet and honest voice of the distressed girl. "But I cannot marry you." "Tess," he said, holding her at arm's length, "you are engaged to marry someone else." "No, no." "Then why do you refuse me?" "I don't want to marry. I have not thought of doing it. I cannot. I only want to love you." "But why?" Driven to subterfuge, she stammered, "Your father is a parson, and your mother wouldn't like you to marry such as me. She will want you to marry a lady." "Nonsense, I have spoken to them both. That was partly why I went home." "I feel I cannot, never, never," she echoed. "Is it too sudden to be asked thus, my pretty?" "Yes, I did not expect it. If you will let it pass, please, Tessie, I will give you time," he said. "He was very abrupt to come home and speak to you all at once. I'll not allude to it again for a while." She again took up the shining skimmer, held it beneath the pump, and began anew. But she could not, as at other times, hit the exact undersurface of the cream with the delicate dexterity required. Try as she might, sometimes she was cutting down into the milk, sometimes in the air. She could hardly see, her eyes having filled with two blurring tears drawn forth by a grief which, to this her best friend and dear advocate, she could never explain. "I can't skim, I can't," she said, turning away from him. Not to agitate and hinder her longer, the considerate Claire began talking in a more general way. "You quite misapprehend my parents. They are the most simple-mannered people alive, and quite unambitious. They are two of the few remaining evangelical school. Tessie, are you an evangelical?" "I don't know." "You go to church very regularly, and our parson here is not very high, they tell me." Tess's ideas on the views of the parish clergyman, whom she heard every week, seemed to be rather more vague than Claire's, who had never heard him at all. "I wish I could fix my mind on what I hear there more firmly than I do," she remarked as a safe generality. "It is often a great sorrow to me." She spoke so unaffectedly that Angel was sure in his heart that his father could not object to her on religious grounds, even though she did not know whether her principles were high, low, or broad. He himself knew that, in reality, the confused beliefs which she held, apparently imbibed in childhood, were, if anything, Tractarian as to phraseology, and pantheistic as to essence. Confused or otherwise, to disturb them was his last desire. "Leave thou thy sister, when she prays, her early heaven, her happy views, nor thou with shadowed, hint confuse a life, that leads melodious days." He He had occasionally thought the council less honest than musical, but he gladly conformed to it now. He spoke further of the incidents of his visit, of his father's mode of life, of his zeal for his principles. She grew serener, and the undulations disappeared from her skimming. As she finished one lead after another, he followed her, and drew the plugs for letting down the milk. I fancied you looked a little downcast when you came in, she ventured to observe, anxious to keep away from the subject of herself. Yes, well, my father had been talking a good deal to me of his troubles and difficulties, and the subject always tends to depress me. He is so zealous that he gets many snubs and buffetings from people of a different way of thinking from himself, and I don't like to hear of such humiliations to a man of his age, the more particularly as I don't think earnestness does any good when carried so far. He has been telling me of a very unpleasant scene in which he took part quite recently. He went as the deputy of some missionary society to preach in the neighborhood of Trantridge, a place 40 miles from here, and made it his business to expostulate with a lax young cynic he met with somewhere about their son of some landowner up that way, and who was a mother afflicted with blindness. My father addressed himself to the gentleman point blank, and there was quite a disturbance. It was very foolish of my father, I must say, to intrude his conversation upon a stranger, when the probabilities were so obvious that it would be useless. But whatever he thinks to be his duty, that he'll do, in season or out of season. And, of course, he makes many enemies, not only among the absolutely vicious, but among the easygoing, who hate being bothered. He says he glories in what happened, and that good may be done indirectly. But I wish he would not wear himself out now he is getting old, and would leave such pigs to their wallowing. Tess's look had grown hard and worn, and her ripe mouth tragical, but she no longer showed any tremulousness. Claire's revived thoughts of his father prevented his noticing her particularly, and so they went on down the white row of liquid rectangles till they had finished, and drained them off, when the other maids returned, and took their pails, and Deb came to scald out the leads for the new milk. As Tess withdrew to go afield to the cows, he said to her softly, and my question, Tessie? Oh no, no, replied she with grave hopelessness, as one who had heard anew the turmoil of her own past in the allusion to Alec D'Urberville. It can't be. She went out towards the mead, joining the other milkmaids with a bound, as if trying to make the open air drive away her sad constraint. All the girls drew onward to the spot where the cows were grazing in the farther mead, the bevy advancing with the bold grace of wild animals, the reckless unchastened motion of women accustomed to unlimited space in which they abandoned themselves to the air as a swimmer to the wave. It seemed natural enough to him now that Tess was again in sight, to choose a mate from unconstrained nature, and not from the abodes of art. XXVIII, her refusal, though unexpected, did not permanently daunt Claire. His experience of women was great enough for him to be aware that the negative often meant nothing more than the preface to the affirmative. And it was little enough for him not to know that in the manner of the present negative there lay a great exception to the dallyings of coyness. That as he had already permitted him to make love to her, he read as an additional assurance, not fully throwing, that in the fields and pastures, to eye gratis is by no means deemed waste, love-making being here more often accepted inconsiderately, and for its own sweet sake than in the carking anxious homes of the ambitious, where a girl's craving for an establishment paralyzes her healthy thought of a passion as an end. Tess, why did you say no in such a positive way, he asked her in the course of a few days. She started. Don't ask me. I told you why partly. I am not good enough, not worthy enough. How? Not fine lady enough? Yes, something like that, murmured she. Our friends would scorn me. Indeed, you mistake them, my father and mother. As for my brothers, I don't care. He clasped his fingers behind her back to keep her from slipping away. Now you did not mean it, sweet. I am sure you did not. You have made me so restless that I cannot read, or play, or do anything. I am in no hurry, Tess, but I want to know to hear from your own warm lips that you will someday be mine any time you may choose. But someday? She could only shake her head and look away from him. Claire regarded her attentively, conned the characters of her face, as if they had been hieroglyphics. The denial seemed real. Then I ought not to hold you in this way, ought I? I have no right to you, no right to seek out where you are, or walk with you. Honestly, Tess, do you love any other man? How can you ask? She said, with continued self-suppression. I almost know that you do not. But then, why do you repulse me? I don't repulse you. I like you to tell me you love me, and you may always tell me so as you go about with me, and never offend me. But you will not accept me as a husband? Ah, that's different. It is for your good, indeed, my dearest. Oh, believe me, it is only for your sake. I don't like to give myself the great happiness so promising to be yours in that way, because I am sure I ought not to do it. But you will make me happy. Ah, you think so, but you don't know. At such times as this, apprehending the grounds of her refusal to be her modest sense of incompetence in matters social and polite, he would say that she was wonderfully well informed and versatile, which was certainly true. Her natural quickness and her admiration for him, having led her to pick up his vocabulary, his accent, and fragments of his knowledge, to a surprising extent. After these tender contests and her victory, she would go away by herself under the remotest cow, if at milking time, or into the sedge, or into her room, if at a leisure interval, and mourn silently, not a minute after an apparently phlegmatic negative. The struggle was so fearful, her own heart was so strongly on the side of his two ardent hearts against one poor little conscience, that she tried to fortify her resolution by every means in her power. As he had come to Talbothays with a made-up mind. On no account could she agree to a step which might afterwards cause bitter ruin to her husband for his blindness in wedding her. And she held that, what her conscience had decided for her, when her mind was unbiased, ought not to be overruled now. Why don't somebody tell him all about me? She said. It was only 40 miles off. Why hasn't it reached here? Somebody must know. Yet nobody seemed to know, nobody told him. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.